death penalty will be applied. And here we're adopting a law that says it cannot be applied for 14, 15 if we pass this bill, 16 and 17 year olds as it relates to the man.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The concern I have about, one concern I have about retaining what I am hypothesizing is this sort of hardened, very dangerous individual in the juvenile system, is that if you're going to retain them for very long in McLaren, for example, it's my belief that within 1 to 3 years, they've exhausted whatever benefit they can obtain from the juvenile system. So we're not doing them any favors by keeping them there. We're really imposing dead time on them. But we are also subjecting the other juveniles there to an individual who is hardened and negative in their peer influence. And to that extent, I think we undermine the very reason that we've established a separate system. So what I want to do, and what I think Senate Bill 414 does a good job of doing, is allows us to sort of separate out those individuals that aren't going to benefit from juvenile-type programming because of their character, and move them on into the adult system at the appropriate time. I'd like to close my testimony by seconding Leonard Monk's testimony in that I would recommend to the committee that on page 3, in section 3, down at the bottom, line 32, that be changed to any person under 18 years of age, which would have the effect of mandating that up to the age 18, that the individuals would have to have their initial placement in the state training school. And I say that partially coming from the experience recently of attempting to remand a 16-year-old who had a prior history of a minor assault, some other felonies, who repeatedly raped and sodomized a woman who had recently given birth, and did so in her own house. And every expert who evaluated that individual indicated that he was pre-schizophrenic, likely to be dangerous for years and years, well beyond age 21. But he was not remanded. And the judge later indicated to me, and I had suspected this to be the case, that she did not do so because she believed that he would be very badly treated in his initial placement in the adult system, and was unwilling for him to be set up for victimization. So I think we need the flexibility which Senate Bill 414 provides to the court and to the juvenile corrections authorities. Thank you.
All right, any other questions?
Thanks very much. I'd already thought about the same thing on that change from 21 to 18. There's one other thing that I'd mention for the sponsor's consideration, and that is maybe there should be a court proceeding at age 18 to see if the, and maybe at that particular point in time, the decision should be made whether the defendant goes on to an adult correction facility or not. Maybe there's a real terrible crime committed at the age of 14, but maybe at age 18 there has in fact been rehabilitation. And I'm thinking about a two-step deal here where a court can actually take another look at the question when the child turns 18. That's
if I could respond just briefly to that, Senator Fry. This bill puts to an extent that decision in the hands of the juvenile corrections people. The assistant administrator for CSD, at such point as there's a determination by the administrator that the individual is not benefiting any further from being in the juvenile system or is becoming a risk, an unacceptable risk to the other juveniles, they can waive them on to the adult system. And so you've got that ability in Senate Bill 414.
Well, Mr. Chair.
But what you're getting at isn't do they get a due process hearing at that point, or is that simply an administrative decision that's made?
It's an administrative decision. I suspect that is the proper way to set that up, Senator Hendrickson, because you've already had a remand hearing. I don't think one needs to add on another relook at the same issue.
So in other words, yeah, they're being treated as an adult. An adult offender would not have that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've had the remand hearing, which has looked at some of those issues to begin with. So they've had, in the sense of due process, they've already had a full court review of that whole question, and they wouldn't be in the position of having the juvenile corrections people waive them into the adult system if they'd not already had that full judicial review.
Anything else? All right. Thanks very much. Now, I'll give you an example of how to win friends and influence people among not only the general public, but your colleagues in the Senate. And that is, you cut off a hearing at a certain time, and a lot of folks who want to testify don't get a chance to testify today, and they have to come back later. But we've got another bill that I've prearranged for a beginning time of 5 p.m., and it's a little bit after 5. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 415 at this time. This bill will receive an early, the public hearing will resume at an early date on this bill. I think there is a lot of interest in this bill, the part of the public and the part of the committee members here, so that will be done. I have to apologize to the six or seven people, particularly Paul Leonarduzzi, who came up here from Eugene, and I don't know who else is from out of town. We have some people from Portland and Washington County, but my regrets on that. So that's going to close the public hearing for the time being on Senate Bill 415. 414. Sorry about that. Now I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 375. And,
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to leave.
Yes, I'm going to have to make a
committee. Let the people know that, but yes. I'll stay. I was
you've got 7 minutes late, so I'll stay.
We've got how many? Four members on the committee? You and Brockman and Fadley and Mark.
Is that right? Hannon, McCoy.
No, I mean just from this committee.
Oh, three.
Well, who else? Who? Senator Wyers,
Brown,
Senator
Brown,
Brockman. Senator Fadley. Yes.
There is another committee that starts its meeting at 5 o'clock, and that committee has four members on this committee. And so in just a very few minutes, you'll see fewer members here because they have to go to another committee meeting. That's kind of the way the process works, unfortunately. Senator Fadley is chairman of that committee. Senator Brockman's on that committee. Senator Brown's on that committee. Senator Wyers is on that committee. And they're just going to have to go attend to that committee now. Very shortly. So here we go with Senate Bill 375, and Senator Meeker's here. And I'll note for the record that this is the first occasion in this session when a television camera has been in this room at our committee meeting. So we are indeed honored.
Mr. Chair, may I make a note for the benefit of people who wonder why I leave? I had an appointment in Portland at 6:30 with us, which I've extended to 7, but I will have to leave at 6.
All right. Thank you, Senator Simmons.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Meeker, State Senator, District 15. I've written a letter to you dated April the 24th, which was written, sent to your committee yesterday, that outlined those people who were interested in testifying on this bill. Myself, Senator Day, Senator Olson, who, as you know, is ill, U.S. Customs Officer Larry Ladage, U.S. Postal Inspector Paul Canariato, Sergeant Bob Williker, Portland Police Department, Bart Wilson, CSD, Multnomah County Child Abuse Coalition, President Keith Mistenheimer, Regina Scheidler, Mary Cullivan, Dr. James Hogue, Tom K., Walter J. Shaw, and a number of other interested citizens who have requested the opportunity to speak, and I think they've probably signed up. I apologize to the committee for not being able to get some of the people here who wanted to. Originally, we had this hearing set by the chairman at 3:30, and people had already left for the Capitol when I was advised this morning, approximately 11:20, that the time was changed till 5 p.m. I also apologize to those folks who have traveled great distances that there's a conflict from another committee. The problem of missing and abused children in this country and in this state should be at the top of our list of concerns as legislators, as human beings. It is estimated that at least 1,500,000 children are missing from their homes each year. Many end up sexually abused or even murder victims. Many are simply never seen again. Oregon's child abuse statistics, particularly those for sexual abuse, skyrocketed last year for the fourth time this decade. The United States Congress has acknowledged this problem by passing the Missing Children's Act in 1984, and a National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has also been established. While these federal activities are a positive step in helping sexually abused and exploited children, much more can be done at the state level. Comprehensive state legislation is critically needed to help solve this problem. This is not a partisan issue. Laws to protect children should transcend party affiliation. It is a tragic reality that there are those people in our society who seek out children to gratify their sick sexual fantasies. An inextricable connection exists between child pornography and child abuse. Each photo represents the actual molestation of a child, and these photos are circulated, distributed, and either purchased or traded among other pedophiles, inciting them to commit still more crimes against innocent children. People who commit crimes against children go to jail less often and for shorter terms than other criminals, even though they are convicted more frequently for those crimes, according to a four-state study recently released by the Department of Justice. The study found that only 8% of those arrested for child-related felonies are sentenced to prison for more than 1 year. By comparison, 12% of those charged with similar crimes against victims of all ages receive jail terms of a year or more. The difference appears most striking in sex offense cases, where a total of 65% of those arrested for sexual assaults against children were convicted, compared to 54% for assaults against others. Despite the high conviction rate, only 13% of the child-related convictions drew jail terms of more than a year, compared to 17% for other assaults.
Senator Meeker, could I ask you this? Could you give me the source of that? Could you provide me at some point in time the source of that? And the reason I ask the question is I know that the imprisonment rate is very close to 100% in Lane County on the kinds of cases you're describing. And I'd kind of like to know if there are other counties in Oregon that must have a pretty low
rate. I distributed to the committee sometime before the committee meeting at the request of the committee staff a booklet which contains my testimony.
Yes, I got
it. It contains excerpts from studies and newspaper articles in which all of this information can be found, and the reference for that material.
Yeah.
My testimony basically extracts from that material those points that I felt would be important to the committee, trying to save you some time.
That's fine. I appreciate this, too. It didn't make any reference right in your testimony.
No.
That source, and that was reason for my question.
That's correct.
But we'll look it up.
The differences appeared most striking in sex offense cases, where a total of 65% of those arrested for sexual assaults against children were convicted, compared to 54% for assaults against others. Now, despite this higher conviction rate, only 13% of the child-related convictions drew jail terms of more than a year, compared to 17% for other assaults. It has been estimated by the International Trafficking in that the international trafficking in child pornography is somewhere between $5 and $6 billion a year. An international network of child pornographers and molesters promotes such activities as packaged child sex tours and auctions, auctions where children, not printed material, were sold. Now, most people are understanding of the physical and psychological damage that can be done to young boys and girls who are sexually exploited in this way. The United States Supreme Court ruled in 1982 that child pornography is not protected under free speech guarantees of the Constitution. And that is the Ferber decision. The pornographers will continue to thrive as long as this issue is ignored in Oregon, as long as the sexual abuse of children is treated as a lesser offense than the unspeakable crime that it is. Child pornography has emerged as a key feature in society's heightened concern about the sexual molestation of children. Denmark, one of the two liberal countries which are said to produce most of the child pornography that is sold in this country, has recently toughened up its laws in this area. In that packet, you'll find a letter from the Royal Danish Consulate General in Los Angeles, which includes a statement from Mr. Erik Ninn-Hansen, the Danish Minister for Justice, on this subject. Although most cases involving child sexual abuse takes place in the home, experts say there is a definite connection between child sexual abuse and child prostitution, as well as child pornography. A report by the Federal Justice Department Office of Juvenile Justice estimates that 1.5 million children younger than the age of 16 were involved in child prostitution or pornography. The report also cites that thousands of unsolved murders of children each year appear to be related to these activities. The 1982 U.S. Supreme Court decision permits states to prescribe pornography involving children without having to define obscene, and this has spurred many states to bring their laws into line with this new federal view. In its ruling, the court carved out a broad exception to the First Amendment protection of free speech. In his opinion, Justice Byron White wrote that child pornography was a serious national problem, and that the states were entitled to a greater leeway in the regulation of it. When the court announced its decision, 20 states already had child pornography laws similar to that of the state of New York, on which the Ferber decision was made. Since that time, many other states, including California, Ohio, Alaska, Idaho, Utah, and Washington, have strengthened their laws. It is time for Oregon to strengthen its laws. President Reagan's signing of the Child Protection Act, which deals with the distribution of materials across state lines, brought federal law in line with the Ferber decision and raised the fine for a first offense from $10,000 to $100,000. It also permitted authorities for the first time to go to court to seize the profits of pornographers. Senate Bill 375 would put some teeth into existing Oregon law. It would raise the age of child protection from 16 to 18. Under ORS 163.315, a person is considered incapable of consenting to a sexual act if he is under 18 years of age. And it also would remove the requirement that the material meet the legal definition of obscene and provide heavy fines and prison terms for those convicted. Our efforts to prevent crimes against children have not been adequate. There has been an urgent demand by Americans, by Oregonians, from all walks of life, that the problem of missing and sexually exploited children in this country and in this state must be confronted.
Okay, thank you. Senator, I wouldn't make this statement at this particular point in time, except for the fact that we do have television here, and there are going to be a lot of people out there watching television, and they're not going to be able to hear all of the witnesses in this hearing. I just want the audience to know, and I want the television audience to know, that Oregon has very strict child pornography laws. To listen to the presentation, you wouldn't think Oregon had much of in the way of child pornography laws, but we do, and as I understand this bill here, the main thrust of it is to raise the age of children that fall within the gamut of the law from 16 to 18 and substantially enhance the penalty. I don't really see the substantial difference between existing Oregon law and Senate Bill 375 that would appear from the statements of the sponsor. I just want it understood clearly that Senate Bill 375 only makes some changes in current Oregon law. We do have a law on child pornography in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry you decided to cast your vote before you hear the balance of the testimony.
I want to make a statement before the television camera left here.
Well, it's given me an opportunity to explain the difference between existing law and what this bill proposes.
Okay, go ahead. I think I know the differences, but go ahead.
Well, the basic thrust of Senate Bill 375 is to, first of all, delete the requirement to meet the definition of obscene. It does indeed raise the age from 16 to 18, which is just as important as the change in the definition of meeting the need of the obscene language that's currently in the law. It does indeed expand beyond just selling some of the requirements under which a person can be convicted of a crime. So to say that this bill is not tougher than the existing law is totally incorrect.
Oh, it is tougher than existing law.
You will hear testimony from experts in the field of pursuing people who sell child pornography that can tell you that Oregon does indeed need to toughen up its law to fit the 1982 Supreme Court decision.
All right. I'm going to be anxious to see all that, too, because I want to find out if there's any of this material that couldn't be prosecuted under current Oregon law. That's going to be a key question I'm going to ask every witness. I don't disagree with the idea that there needs to be some changes made, but I don't want to start off with the impression that that the legislature has been ignoring this problem all this year. As you know, you were involved very much in the passage of the present statutes in Chapter 163 dealing with child pornography, and I think that that's the impression, as I say, not that the audience is going to hear all the testimony will get, but the impression that the people that are going to watch the television pictures may get, that the Oregon legislature has been ignoring this problem all these years, and that's just not accurate. All right. Senator Wires.
If I can be convinced that we can do anything to strengthen the law and reduce the amount of exploitation of children in this way, I will happily, eagerly support it. I hope we'll have another hearing on this bill because, as you announced, some of us have to leave for another committee. This committee traditionally is scheduled to be over 20 minutes ago, and the chair is carrying this over so the public can be heard on these bills. I have to leave. But I hope we'll be able to hear more testimony on this. And I pledge that I'll do everything I can that is enforceable to strengthen the laws in this area. I would like to, at a subsequent hearing, have an opportunity as well to play tape of an attempt at a character assassination of me in a political campaign around this issue. I did, as I intend to do this time, my level best last session to make the law work in this area. If I somehow didn't understand fully what could or should be done, I am eager to be educated. And I mean that sincerely. I'll do anything I can to help strengthen the law in this area in a way that will be enforceable. But I think to say that someone who doesn't agree exactly with someone else about the way, the best way to do this, is somehow themselves in favor of exploiting children, carries the legislative process and the political process into an area that is not healthy for anyone. And I believe that was done to me, and I hope that that isn't going to happen in the future, because I think I have the greatest respect for the witnesses before us, and I'm confident that he would have done nothing to impugn the motives or the character of the colleague. But I think that things did happen in that campaign, and I think they should be brought to attention to the committee, because we have to be able to exercise our judgment in a way to do the best we can for people of Oregon without the fear or threat of an attempted character assassination.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is not brought to you for political or for lighthearted intentions. It is a sincere attempt to address what I personally and many others, as you will find, believe to be a vacancy in our law. I have not attempted to imply that the legislature has ignored this issue. It's just the fact that the United States Supreme Court changed the boundaries on which we can draft child pornography laws. Now, it's 1985. That was 3 years ago. When the Supreme Court changed those boundaries, it gave us an opportunity to address a hole in our way of approaching child pornographers and those people who exploit children in that process. A lot of the information that was presented to you, both statistically and in the way in which the laws have been changed in other states, in the very manner that we are proposing here, comes from the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, selected state legislation, a guide for effective state laws to protect children. Now, to imply that there's some other purpose in this is disheartening. And I would hope that the committee would look at the testimony that's being presented in a very unbiased, in a very factual, straightforward manner. You will hear from people who are in the business of protecting children, and they will tell you what we need to do. Now, if the bill is imperfect, we're certainly open to amendments. I, as a matter of fact, have one set of amendments that include two more words that would make the law even better.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Brown.
Before I leave for my committee where I was due 25 minutes ago, I want to assure Senator Meeker that I, for one, share this concern. You might remember back in, I think it was the 77 session or the 79 session, I carried legislation to toughen up the laws on fingerprinting and photographing abused children. And we got the best law through at that time that we could under the circumstances, because we've had those incidents in my county. I've not read the Supreme Court decision. I assume from what you say that it does not require that the test of obscenity be met in this material. I hope that what you substituted here for that is as tough as we can make it. I support basically the increase in penalties and the increase in age, but it's an all those who are concerned about abuse of children have to realize that all legislation that we have to draft here must be constitutional, must meet the best test that's been laid down by the Supreme Court. I hope this makes that test. I'll rely upon counsel and upon my colleagues to see that this is the best bill we can turn out of this committee. And I'm sorry I have to leave.
Oh, yeah, before you leave, Senator Brown, there's one thing that I'm sure you're aware of that I think is needs to be established, too, and that is, you know, the Oregon Constitution would override any U.S. Supreme Court decision that interpreted the First Amendment, because the Oregon Constitution could be interpreted, you know, more
narrowly.
Yeah.
More broadly.
More broadly, I think is accurate. In other words, what the U.S. Constitution may say about the First Amendment
is not necessarily what our Supreme Court here is going to end up saying about the Oregon equivalent of the First Amendment. So it's got, I say that because we've got to keep our eye cocked on whether it's going to pass constitutional muster on kind of two levels.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman. I was I opposed a liberalization of the separation of church and state provision in this state's constitution to meet the more liberal provisions of the U.S. Constitution. So I do know those differences, and if there's greater protection in the Oregon Bill of Rights, I know we will have to meet that.
Mr. Chairman, not being a lawyer, I don't have the advantage to be able to view the Constitution as many of you sitting at the table in front of me do. But I would suggest to you that the legislature has often dealt with legislation that someone thought might be unconstitutional simply to allow the process of law to determine that kind of thing. I'm perfectly willing to do that. But I've heard the argument on the floor of the Senate about bills that got 18 to 25 votes from other people saying that this bill is unconstitutional. Well, it may very well be in that person's opinion. But I think that it's...
Where are you stationed now?
In Portland, yes. I have some background information. A lot of people wonder how Customs has the authority to do what they do. I'm sure ACLU certainly does, and a lot of attorneys don't understand our laws.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Chair. You have a lot more authority dealing with foreign importations.
Yes,
when you're dealing with rights.
I can very briefly run through that. It'll explain how we got that and how we utilize it, if that's of interest.
Yeah,
to
that
you.
Might be of interest.
Because it very much would complement any of your laws and enhance them, especially this bill under consideration.
Let me just suggest that if one of us happens to be talking, maybe we talk too much, but if we happen to be talking, then I wouldn't want anyone else to be talking, because it's very hard when she transcribes or he transcribes the tapes. Separate the double voices, so we'll try and watch that one at a time, please. Go ahead.
Right. Essentially, I'll try to summarize this, not to make it too long. Our jurisdiction does cover the importation of pornography into the U.S. from foreign sources. This has been a response, and it's been an increase in that response in the last few years by the administration. And we have increased our seizures, our criminal investigations. We do have responsibility for interdicting all contraband, including pornography, at some 300 ports, 23 major mail facilities around the country. Our mission is to protect the health and welfare of American citizens. We have a very unique search authority. We do not need a warrant to search for what they call a border search. And that goes back to 1789. First Congress legally authorized Customs to detain and search persons and property entering the United States. No probable cause was required to conduct these searches at the border. The courts have recognized this uniformly exception to the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. In an 1886 decision, the Supreme Court held that border searches and seizures were not unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. This border search exception was further extended to international mail openings by the Supreme Court in 1977, and this is very important as it relates to child pornography from a federal view. Our commissioner has made this a very high priority, and we have increased our efforts. In a very quick summary of the efforts, within the last couple of years, we've run blitzes on international mail, targeting pornography. We've added people to search the mail for pornography. We've alerted inspectors to be more watchful. As a result of these efforts, Customs has seized some 4,266 obscene articles in 1984.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I was just reading some of the articles that were, as we were in here about where the pornography comes from in terms of where does most of it come from that you are dealing with?
It comes, and I have that on the list here as to the source countries. Scandinavia, Denmark, Netherlands is very prominent as far as the source. I'd say the majority comes from Netherlands, Sweden, Denmark. At any rate, this amount of seizures has increased some 400% over the last couple of years. So we have made an effort. We are stopping this. The thing that we do in cooperation with Postal Service, following such seizures now, where our mail people stop these, they manage to pick them up, and they're all disguised coming in. They aren't saying this is child pornography on them. It's everything from car manuals to whatever. It's all a disguised mail coming in. We don't catch it all. This is what we catch. What we're trying to do beyond just intercepting the mail is we work with Postal Service. We are doing search warrants federally, and the results are quite interesting. We found on a nationwide basis fully three quarters of the search warrants we execute turn up evidence that the recipient of the article of child pornography has been molesting children. Customs has uncovered photos of hundreds of exploited children and dozens of child molesters. Customs seizures have led the rest of, among others, school teachers, child psychologists, Boy Scout leaders, and people with prior records for child molesting. Where the law permits, some additional enforcement action, local police are assisting in these searches. This is critical because they're now able to take evidence necessary where the law permits to charge these people with serious crimes locally. Prior to our effort, it was very difficult to identify child molesters because a young victim would have to come forward. Now, because the person is receiving illegal child pornography, there is a probable cause to obtain a search warrant for the residents, and the local police may assist in the search. This is literally a foot in the door the police never had before. And I think this bill very much addresses that problem of the receipt of child pornography.
Yes, Senator Hickson.
Well, I haven't quite made the leap of how they went from receiving the mail to having... I don't see how you could make a case on that for an individual child being abused. I mean, I think you'd still have to have the child as a witness.
Well, okay, as an example...
I don't know how you...
All right, last month...
From that to problem.
Let me explain that. And last month... A customs mail examiner found an article of child pornography being illegally imported in the mail, and customs agents, along with postal inspectors, delivered the item to residents. This was in Pennsylvania. A man wearing only a bathrobe answered the door, and inside the agents found him with a 13-year-old boy. He admitted molesting the boy, and over 40 Polaroid photographs of other nude young boys were found in the search. He was arrested by the local police, and he is being held now without bail as a threat to society.
Okay, but it was the coincidence of their being able to arrive on the scene.
It was
really
the coincidence
at the
of
a...
Just a minute now, sir.
Okay, I'm sorry.
They weren't able to establish probable cause simply because he had received mail.
No.
It was when they went to investigate
That's right.
They were able to find him engaging... in mm-hmm. illegal activities with the minor.
And that's somebody they never would have come across. That's the foot in the door by the state also having laws that made it impossible to receive this stuff, handle it, not just where it was made, whether or not it was illegal. It was illegal by its nature, and the receiving, distributing, and so on gave them the additional authority to come in with us, and then from there they expanded. And we find that.
Now, what if someone got mailed some of this stuff? Maybe they didn't solicit it.
Well,
and could you go in without a warrant to their house, too?
We could, but we don't. We look...
Well, how would you know? Who
we
was
know usually there? Because we'll build a series of mailings, and we find on a national computer, we'll find that the people are receiving this as a trend. We won't take one letter from someone and go in and kick in their door and all this. We build a case. We find out, do they have a record for child molesting? We do background checks.
Here's what I'd like to have you do, and
response to Senator Henderson's request. I'd like to have you tie in, you haven't done it so far in my view, the fact that there's a flood of pornography, especially from foreign countries, but assuming it comes from across the river in Vancouver, in our mails, and that there's a lot of it, there's too much of it, it's bad stuff. I still want you to try and connect up, if you can, any of that with the terms of this bill. What is there about this bill?
I think, as I understand the bill, that if we have a mail, a package of child pornography books that come in through the mail, we intercept it, and for some reason the feds do not prosecute, because this is a mailer from out of the state or something, even from a country where it's legal. I mean, that's a beautiful loophole, if I understand it, to say that if this was made in Denmark, it's not illegal to make this in Denmark, therefore it's not illegal.
Could I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
I don't want to go off the tip. Yeah. Do you know what the laws are in Denmark with respect
to children? As I understand it, it's not illegal to
for children
to possess this material
to make it.
It seems to vary, and I can't say country by country. I know that it is being made with impunity in those countries.
Impunity
and
is
the
different
law,
than legal.
Oh, I agree. And
well, I don't think the witness really knows.
I don't.
So let's go back to my question, sir.
Okay.
Can you take a look at Senate Bill 375? If you don't have it in front of you, I will give you another copy. And tell me where I can look in that bill to take care of the problem that you've been describing now to us here about all this stuff coming in the mail.
The problem, as I understand it, is a recipient of child pornography. It's not illegal by your bill. If it comes from...
It's not illegal under this bill.
If you have someone that receives this, a kiddie porn magazine, which we brought samples, I don't know if you're interested, if you've ever seen any of these, but they're a lot different than... These talk about them is one thing, to see them is something else. As I understand it, if you get a magazine in from out of the country, wherever, and it's delivered to someone, that is not a violation as it would be federal-wise.
Well, okay.
Is that true or not?
I
understand the bill isn't.
We're sitting here listening to witnesses who can explain why this situation, which all of us agree is deplorable, can be met or countered or attacked with Senate Bill 375. That's what I want to hear about.
Okay, and I agree. And all of this is going to that, and it goes to the fact that the state bill is not compatible with the federal law, and you have much better luck enforcing any law when you have state and federal compatibility.
Senator Henderson.
I think what he's getting at is I think Section 3 of Senate Bill 375 would make it illegal to procure such a film or a magazine. So I guess what he's saying is we would make it a criminal matter if the person... actually received in the mail, or had, if, I guess,
received,
if it had to order it, it couldn't come
well,
in.
Well, yeah, order it, receive.
I did want to say, too, Mr. Chair, that Jack gave me a copy of the letter that was sent to Ms. Meeker from the Danish consulate, and it is illegal in Denmark.
In Denmark,
it
okay.
It is illegal to make pornographic films of children.
Okay. Yeah, I think... I would hope most countries have the laws and so on, but to depend on, I don't know.
Well, could I just ask another question?
Go ahead.
Since you're expert in this area, people who are ordering these films to distribute or magazines from overseas, I mean, they would have to know what country they're getting it from, because they're ordering it from there.
Well, that doesn't mean they know the laws in that country, though.
Well, would
that be a defense?
Well,
I didn't know, is it illegal in Denmark or Sweden or Korea?
I don't know. You can't go into any court and say, well, I didn't know it was illegal, when there's a law saying it's illegal.
Intent is the key word in any criminal violation.
I guess it's the word that procures in here that...
would make the...
That would make... receiving this in the mail, it would make that the crime of promoting.
I think that subsequent witnesses will clarify, because they work with the state law presently. I'm just saying that I had an incident not too long ago where there was a...
Well, that isn't the present state law. That would be the change proposed in this bill. It's presently, as I read this bill, which has the old statute here too, it doesn't appear to be illegal now to procure
right.
or to order it.
This
bill would make it illegal. So our law enforcement people here have not dealt with the law that makes it illegal to procure
it. I think they have some comments, and looking at it, they still see some problems with Senator Meeker, apparently, has pointed out. But again, at state level, I'm saying that from the federal level, the closer we can get to the federal law, the more effective combating this the child pornography is going to be. And this is not something that, if the national statistics are true, which they have, the Customs wouldn't put that out if they weren't, there is a 75% relationship with child molesters, people that receive this. Our last prosecution, the man had done over 20 years in prison for child molesting, and he was out, and he's back in prison now as a result of a mail parcel. And he'd done over 20 years of his life in prison for child molesting, and the local chief of police wasn't even aware that he'd been in prison for child molesting in a small town south.
Okay, sir, can you wrap it up in about a minute?
Okay, very, very simply, we do have a problem in Oregon with child pornography and child molesters. Our mailings, Oregon City, Sherwood, Tillamook, lots in Portland, Milwaukee, Salem, Eugene, there's Cheshire, Coos Bay, Florence, Myrtle Point, Talent, Klamath Falls, Pendleton, Baker, John Day, Tigard, you name it, and that's where these parcels are going. And they're not going by the hundreds of thousands, but they're coming consistently. When we did the recent prosecutions, within the last year, we did see a decline in this pornography. It's starting to pull up again. As far as the foreign stuff goes, and maybe it doesn't matter if it's made foreign, I have foreign magazine articles coming into the country that talk about, they have classified ads for children.
Okay, fine. I think we're well aware of the stuff that's coming in, I want to get to some witnesses here. Before another committee member leaves, it might be able to relate this bill to the Oregon problems.
That's good. I do thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr.
And,
Dodge.
Anything we can do will be able to help.
Now, all right. I'd like to have Sergeant Wallacher up, please.
Chairman Fry and other committee members, thank you for the opportunity for me to address this issue. I prepared some testimony, and I'm not going to read it because of the time element. A couple of things I'd like to point out, though, is that the law that we currently have is mainly geared toward, I believe, a commercial production of pornography, child pornography. And I am not aware of any successful prosecutions under the law as it now stands. We had a gentleman who in Multnomah County some years ago went and lured children off of school grounds and talked them into taking their clothes off, took pictures of them in the nude, and then left. He didn't touch the children. He was identified in 11 cases. He was caught with the photos in his pocket. He was caught trying to talk a little girl into leaving the school ground. She was 6 years of age. And nothing was ever done to him. He was not prosecuted under this law as it now stands.
Well, why wasn't he prosecuted?
He was possessing child pornography.
Well, under, he did more than that, though. You just told me that he lured little children out and had them take off their clothes and so forth, didn't you?
Yes.
All right.
He may, under the law, he didn't employ, he didn't really authorize, he may have induced a child under 16 to engage.
I'd say he sure did induce a child.
I would say so.
To engage in an obscene sexual performance, but under the Miller law, the constitutional law back in 1977, which is the way this law was written, what this law was written from the Supreme Court decision. If you go through what sexual conduct is, And it would be taken as a whole, appeals to the prurient interest in sex, or applies to contemporary standards. And in that situation, he was caught possessing child pornography. He couldn't be arrested for that. He had pockets full of it, but he couldn't be arrested for possessing or having on his person that type of pornography.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hendrickson.
No, but why wasn't he arrested for taking a child from a schoolyard and inducing a child to take off the clothes?
He was, and he was let go by the judge. He was identified in 11 cases. We're told there was no law that he violated.
Well, I can't believe
it's not against the law
to take a child from a school.
He did not take. He talked the child into going into the bushes. Actually, it was still on the school property in most cases. And he talked the child all the time. It was a small girl. And of taking the clothes off, dropping and displaying the genitals under Senate Bill 375, that would be a lewd exhibition of the genitals. That is also the word in the ACLU suggested law, lewd exhibition of the genitals. Okay. What this does is it takes the New York law in the Ferber decision and inserts it into Oregon law. And the Ferber decision, as you've heard, has already gone through the Supreme Court of the United States, a unanimous decision in 1982, which makes this type of conduct illegal.
I still don't understand why that case, they wouldn't have fallen under existing law, which makes it a crime to induce a child under the age of 16 to engage in an obscene sexual performance. I mean,
because that was not an obscene sexual performance under the law. A child bearing genitals is not obscene. Under the law you now have, that was not lewd exhibition of genitals. Maybe in the new law, in 375, that might not be against the law. But in other cases, we have found a definite cause and effect relationship between people who molest children called pedophiles and the taking of child pornography. I was a sergeant at Multnomah County Sheriff's Office for 10 years assigned to sex crimes, investigating over 3,000 cases of child sexual molest. And in those cases, I noticed there's an increase in the use of photography by pedophiles or the people who molest children to keep children quiet. After they take a photo, they use this to coerce the child into keeping silent. And also they trade this. They trade this in the mail, they trade it among each other, they possess it, they keep books on it in their home. When we go in and we do a search warrant for this material, it's merely to document the case we're working on. If we find other photos of other children, it's not illegal for that person to possess those photos.
I wonder, Mr. Chair,
Senator Hanks,
if something could be fashioned like the indecent exposure laws, where they had the possession thing with an intent to arouse themselves. Would that be too?
Well, I've suggested just two changes in the way this law is written or proposed, Senate Bill 375, and just to insert two words. In procure, issues, gives, provides, lends, delivers, transfers, transmits, publishes, circulates, disseminates. Two other words, mails and possesses. To procure is to gather or to gain. Issue or give is not to possess. To provide, sell, or lend, or to deliver is not to possess. We will go into a home and we will find a fellow that's one example, a fellow that I arrested that had molested children since 1955, had over 2,000 photographs in his home of children that he had molested. He'd move and molest new kids and move again. Mm-hmm. They were mostly Polaroid photographs. We identified 13 of those kids around his neighborhood and were able to prosecute him on those kids alone.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to have this bill to do that then.
Well, except that those photos were given, the other photos were given back to him because it's not illegal for him to have those photos of the other kids
he
took.
Well, I can't. I guess your concern, as I understand it, mostly is the fact that it's legal for people to possess these pictures.
Well, my concern is that this is not a pornography issue. You have to have a victim of a sex crime to have this kind of material. A person has to get a child and take a pornography of the child, a photo of the child being molested, to have this type of material.
That's true.
We're not talking about whether this is Playboy magazine or something else. My concern is there is victims, there are victims in our state that are being photographed by child molesters.
And to take care of that problem, you're saying that we should make possession of the pictures illegal. That's the way you would take care of that problem.
And, well, insert possession and all these other, in all these other language that is here in 375 already. Procure, lend, transfer, sell, disseminate, those other things also. Because if we have pedophiles trading photos of children, we can do a sting operation and ferret them out and arrest them for that. That's how they're found.
And then what are they arrested for?
They're arrested for disseminating, transferring, mailing, and possessing. As in the California law, the Washington law. The two words possess and mail, I believe, I picked out of the Washington law and inserted it into the Oregon law.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So would be those, you'd arrest them for that rather than child abuse then? Or would it be those cases where you couldn't prove child abuse? Or?
Certainly, if we could prove a case of sexual molest of a child, we'd go ahead with a prosecution. What I'm suggesting, though, is if I know a person lives next door here and he has photos of a child he's molested, I may not know who that child is. I can't touch him. I can't do anything to him if he doesn't mail it. If he mails it, it's a violation of federal law. Or if he receives it in the mail, it's a violation of federal law. But if I have knowledge that a child's been in his home, has seen 2,000 photographs of other children being sexually molested, under what basis can I get a search warrant to get that? None, because he is legal to possess, he can legally possess those photos. And I can't go in and do an investigation to find out how he got them, why he has, you know, Polaroids of kids in the neighborhood or whatever. So this is a tool to find out these people, to find out where they are. It also is a tool to address the manufacture of pornography in our state or that type of thing. But basically, my concern is the fact that the victim must be a victim of a sex crime and by the suspect.
Under the ACLU's bill, where it makes it unlawful to employ a child to photograph them and so forth, if there was a law like that on the books, if there were pictures like that, wouldn't there be probable cause for you to get a search warrant then to go in to determine if they were producing those photographs in violation?
Yes, there would. And in fact, the state law as it now exists states that if a person employs a child under 16 to engage in an obscene sexual performance, that's against the law. So we already have a law covering that, basically. If you read the first paragraph of the ACLU suggested law, however, it says a person has another person take photos of the child, and that's illegal. My question would be, who do you arrest? The person who has the other person taking the photos, or the person who's taking the photos themselves?
I would say arrest both of them.
But it's not written that way. It just says it's illegal for a person to get another person to take the photos.
Well,
I'm thinking from the defense side of the case. In other words, you'd have a parent. We have had a case of a parent who actually sold their daughter to have pornographic photos taken of her. And in that case, in the ACLU case, I guess you would arrest the photographer.
Well, I don't understand where you get that reading. It says it's unlawful for any person to employ a child, any person to authorize a child, or any person to induce a child.
Didn't it say
to
another?
Engage in sexual conduct for another person to observe or to record or to photograph? So it's the other person is in relationship to the child.
Okay. Well, I think there is language in both Senate Bill 375 and in the ACLU that could be melted together. I'm in favor of that also. But getting back to what law enforcement can do in this area, without a state law that makes this a felony crime, that makes it illegal to possess or procure or lend or transfer, and gets away from the manufacturing of child pornography and gets into the personal possession of it by child molesters, I don't think we can be effective in our efforts. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to take a 5-minute break, powder room break. Okay. 5-minute break.
How many more witnesses?
Well, all right. Now, before we take the break, I've got a postal inspector, Camariato, am I pronouncing that right, is here. Bart Wilson's here from Children's Services Division.
He is not here, Mr. Chairman.
He is not here.
He sent a letter in to you, which is part of the record.
Keith Meisenheimer is already, is he gone?
Yes, he had to leave. He had to be in Portland at 6:30.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being late, but I was chairing a committee that started at 5, and right. I couldn't get here before now.
I understand. Dottie Belknap, is she here?
She also has to be important.
Okay, Regina Scheidler, she's here. And Mary Cullivan? Okay. I'm not calling you. I'm just calling a roll here. Dr. Hoag, he's here. Tom Kay, he's here. Walter Shaw, he's here. And I think we got some more here. Well, anyway, we'll take, we're going to call all those people for sure. And anybody else that signed up whose name I haven't called, raise your hand. 2, 3, okay, we're going to get to all of you. Might end up being a subcommittee of one here, but we'll listen to you. So we'll just take a very quick recess here and be back at 6:30. We'll resume.
I'm going to not be okay here once. I've got a communication work.
They did. Okay. Senate Committee on Judiciary back in session at 6:30. And Mr. Canariato, come on up.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Paul Canariato. I'm the inspector in charge of the Portland Division of the United States Postal Service. We cover the states of Oregon and Idaho. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee regarding the pernicious effects of child pornography encountered today by those of us in the law enforcement community.
Commissioner Scott?